Summer's here. It's hot. People are sweating, angry, and Joe Biden freaking out along with the Democrats about these videos that show him wandering off. Who better to talk to than Tom Serafin of Serafin & Associates and the Serafin Power Pole and Crisis Cast podcast? And where are you as we talk about summer in Chicago? There's a lot going on. It's bubbling just like the edges of an egg in a frying pan. But this is Chicago and the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way. Absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
And to take big shots to the restaurant and feed them. And Joe Kelly's saxophone with Joe Kelly and his band at the Chicago Club. I mean, it was just, you know, great stuff.
Tom Serafin's telling us about the Gaslight Club. Where was Edie Gourmet? I remember I used to sing to her commercials when I was like 8 years old, because,
you know, that might have been before my time.
Making an old joke at my expense.
I'm older than you are, but I remember Kim Novak, you know, who she was a star and she made it big in show business. And Heidi Stallings from Downers Grove actually spent the bulk of her career, you know, on Broadway after the Gaslight Clubs. And they were performers, the young ladies that waited on tables. Once the band started, they would drop their food trays and everything else. They'd go up on stage and they would sing. I mean, these were real professional singers and dancers that the Gaslight Clubs. And that was the distinction between that and later on Hefner's Playboy Clubs. But Burton Brown started it. And here in the city of Chicago, with headquarters right on Huron, just off of Dearborn.
I used to know a guy who was involved in that real estate years later, but come to think of it, was the Gaslight Club, did they have like sexy girls like who would
they were
pose
were they
naked? Were,
No.
Then forget it. I'm leaving.
No, Chad. No, they were professional performers on stage, and a lot of them did a lot of stage work, and a lot of them went to Hollywood and were in movies, and the most of them though headed for Broadway, where they performed on stage for a long time, and did a very nice job. And it was cool being part of as the public relations director at the time for a couple of years, where I could see the talent come through and move on to greater, bigger things. In our clubs, we were actual performers. I mean, for example, Heidi from Downers Grove, one of Chicago's, terrific young actresses. She was on Broadway for three decades, and she had a beautiful voice. And I saw her, in Toronto and St. Louis doing Evita, And so, I mean, these were people that could do these things. And
They got started
in that. You know, Kim Novak got started in Break the Actress, started at the Gaslight Clubs. So my job was to bring in the food critics, because the restaurants were very good. We had three restaurants on Huron Street. We had one in the Palmer House, one at the Hilton at O'Hare. I think it's still there now. The Chateau Louise was destroyed, torn down years ago, but it was a supper club and a resort area. The club in Washington, D.C. was on 16th Street. We had one at 56th in New York, and one in the Fountain Blue in Miami Beach. And the one in St. Louis, we closed when I was working for them at the time. But it was a thriving business. Excellent food. And if you like jazz, it was a jazz showcase, you know. And Joe Kelly was our headliner. And Joe also played, you know, if you know anything about Arlington Park, he was out there for big races, you know, at the starting gate. And he's cut many, many records and, you know, and been jamming with some of the great artists in the world. So that was fortunate for me. I learned a lot about the music industry and the show business industry. And
did you ever have Ella Fitzgerald in the Gaslight Club? Oh, man.
Not when I was there, but we had just about everybody. Everybody that came through town, it was a key club. If you had a key, you know, and you could get in, and usually
you could show your brother-in-law, like, see, I got the key.
Well, yeah, I did show my brother-in-law. And we had the guy by name was Bob Fredericks was the owner at the time. And he was kind of an eccentric guy. And Mary Nutter, who was the brains of the operation, wonderful, beautiful lady. And she was smart, one of the smartest businesswomen I've ever met in my life. And she ran the show. But I enjoyed it. I mean, I enjoyed that time, but, you know, I had this thing for politics and, you know, I look back and I'm saying to myself, why did I get back in politics to lose another election? But I did. And so be it, right?
Well, so be it, because we're lucky to have you and all that wisdom. Although I would say Kim Novak from the southwest side of Chicago. Yes, I think so.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right.
Probably 63rd and Kedzie or something like that, I'm just thinking. And then she ended up in Alfred Hitchcock movies. Yeah.
Yeah, but in the great 70s, the decade of the 70s, the 60s, from 65 to 99, 65 to 88, those years were terrific years, especially if you love music. And you love the North Side and the South Side, you know, and running in some of those joints and enjoying real good music, you know, blues, jazz, the Jazz Showcase. All those places were kind of just moving at the time, and we were right in sync with it all. I enjoyed that part of my education of life, as my dad would call it.
There was a part of Chicago, a Chicago history that was, I think it was great, and people loved it.
Right,
the movers and shakers,
right.
And they're the guys who are being asked the questions in Tom Serafin's Serafin Power Poll. Like, let me give you an example. Summer in Chicago is going to be action packed. Yeah, no bleep. Which of the following are you most interested in watching from the sidelines or attending? The Rolling Stones, Chicago NASCAR, Windy City Smokeout. No. Pitchfork, I don't know what that is. Lollapalooza, DNC, and related. Will you be away from Chicago, or will you avoid these events? Now, DNC related, speaking of the Gaslight Club, there used to be a club called Gibson's that had a famous entertainer. You could find her. Bill Clinton used to find her in the bar. Her name was the Swede or something like that, the Inga, famous Jay McMullen got an ashtray thrown by Mayor Byrne at his head over Inga.
Well, Mayor Byrne never failed to express herself quickly and, you know, in a way that you understood her completely.
With a heavy ashtray aimed at her husband's head.
Yeah. When enough time for him to duck, though. You know, Jay.
Otherwise,
McMullen,
he'd be dead. Yeah, he would have been dead earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. He, what was his famous saying when he'd walk in the press room, you know, at the City Hall? He'd say, you know, when he was a working member of the media, I rolled over this morning and I got myself my own exclusive or something like that. Wasn't that the term that John?
Yeah, he was the only reporter that needed a first ward bodyguard to protect him from his wife, the mayor. Now here on the alderman in the sheriff and power poll ratings, I have another one for you.
Well, wait, alderman, you didn't answer the questions about what people are most interested in this summer. You read off the list, but
I didn't want to. Jeff has been training me over the past 20 years not to jump too quick, but Jeff, I tease it too much?
No, we didn't pay off. We got sidetracked in ashtray. Always
the big payoff.
I know.
Well, what do you guys think? DNC related?
33% said the Democratic National Convention or associated events is what they're looking forward to, and they'd like to, you know, either attend or be interested in following. NASCAR, which is, you know, July 6th to 7th, 9%. Rolling Stones, 7%. Lollapalooza, 5%. The Windy Smokeout, 3%. Pitchfork, 2%. 23% said, I'll do my best to avoid these events and traffic problems associated. And 18% said, planning on spending time outside the city during these events. So you have, you know, 41% that are not interested in being involved.
What does that tell you?
Well, you know, all the associated issues and problems, you know, that come with large groups of people. Some people are just wanting to stay away from that right now.
I agree. What, Jeff, do you agree? What do you think?
Well, I mean, that's not an agreeing. It's the people are clearly saying that they're not, you know, they're avoiding it. And I don't blame them. The planning the city has shown, especially under Mayor Johnson's reign, planning is not their strong suit. What's the criteria for how you come up with some of this stuff? Because, I mean, it's, are people coming at this in an email blast? I mean, how are people seeing this? Because it kind of depends on how you get responses to something. Because if at first thing in the morning, I'm a little more optimistic. But after I've seen a day's worth of getting cut off in traffic and, you know, crap going on in my life, I'm a little more down on pretty much anything.
7-year-olds getting shot.
Well, yeah. There. And then I read the news, right?
Right.
But it's the methodology is this is not a scientific poll. Mm. This is a group of people of anywhere from 500 to 700 folks that are distributed, the same group of people. And, you know, now and then we may add a few and some may retire or move away, but it's a steady number, about 600-700. And we ask them questions every month, 5 questions about things that are currently happening in the city. And most of these people are selected based on their ability to, you know, to run companies, politicians, people that are involved in associations, the Joyce Fund, people that are involved in all kinds of organizations around town that, sure, you know, make the city work. So you're trying to, we call them the power pollers because they're in the positions of power in the city. People you may never know, but people that are in a position of making decisions that affect all of us. So we ask them every month 5 questions, and then they give us volunteer these answers for us through the internet on an email that they're distributed. I don't have the results. I can't tell you who they are. This is a national chain that I own the rights to it for Illinois and Chicago. So we put this out. We call the Seraphim Power Poll here in Illinois, but there are power polls, you know, in other communities and cities around the country. And I find it fascinating and interesting.
Yeah.
In addition to being, you know, work product, more importantly, it's really an information product for me. And it's amazing how it parallels what activities will happen in the future.
Let's look at another question in the power poll. This is for June. Alderman Brian Hopkins is calling for an 8 p.m. curfew to control gatherings of unaccompanied minors in Chicago's business district. Otherwise, I'm interjecting here, otherwise known as Utes. The proposal follows an assault on a young couple who were repeatedly beaten and pepper sprayed recently. He's referring to the
Streeterville couple that lost her child. Couple,
and she lost the baby. There's already a similar 10 p.m. curfew at Millennium Park. Do you think This latest plan will help curb the questions. Yes, anything to deter violence. I believe it's almost 40%, and it's going to take more than a curfew, 45%, 48%.
Overwhelmingly, people think, yeah, it's a good idea, but it's going to take a lot more than an 8 p.m. curfew to stop what's going on in the street right now. And you know, 40%, as John says, anything to deter violence, anything, 40%, yes. No, only an 11%, no. And so it's kind of self-explanatory. And when you look back at last Thursday's editorial in the Chicago Tribune by Chris Jones, where he talks about violence and says to the mayor, you got to do something about this violence after this poor 7-year-old was shot. And then, you know, a few weeks ago, a 5-year-old was shot. My goodness, where's the outrage in the city? My goodness, you know, it's so sad. And to hear the parents talk about it, and it's over and over and over again. Over 70 people shot a week ago, last weekend. You know, it's not getting better. And the entire world will be here in a few weeks, along with 16,000 members of the international media writing about Chicago and how well they're doing and how well the people are feeling about things.
I have to say, Chris Jones, you know, I've done a little bit of that media work myself, and I have to give a hat tip to Chris Jones. Even though I left the Tribune on bad terms because, well, the prior regime treated me badly, I've never had anything but respect for Chris Jones. And I think he does a good job and the best he can, Tom and Jeff, in a newspaper that is so woke, it's got to be like herding cats. I mean, I don't know how he does it, but, you know.
He writes, you know, his page, he does op-eds and editorials and things. He's intelligent. He's a critic, you know, theater
well
critic.
Read.
Yeah, well read, but he also writes with common sense, you know, which on the editorial page, I can't necessarily say I can always remember people that wrote with a sense of common sense. And he writes that way. And I really enjoy the editorial page since he's taken it over. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I love Chris. He does some good work. And his reviews are very fun to read, too.
And he's from, let's be realistic, he's from Manchester. He's a Manchester fan. He's a fanatic for the Manchester.
He's a transplant, yes.
Soccer team.
So he doesn't watch those guys kick the ball from one end to the other.
As we're speaking, I'm thinking of Slovenia versus Serbia. Usually I'm with the Serbians because of Orthodox Brotherhood, but in the Euro 2024. But Slovenia has Melania Trump and, you know, the once and future First Lady of America. So I have to give my hat tip and my heart touch to Melania's soccer team. Slovenia.
It's a weird flex, John. It's a weird flex.
Tom. I'm not flexing. I'm just.
It is. A little bit.
What's the flex?
Just that you're picking a team based on someone else's allegiance to it, that you're trying to like say, like, I'm with you. You're like flexing to her crowd. I mean, it's weird.
Oh, I see. I don't understand flex, but yes, I'm with you, Melania. I want you actually, I give you a scepter and I want you to run the New York Times in a matter of months too.
That would be interesting. But Tom, I actually had a question for you on the power poll. I mean, we were talking about the violence and obviously the curfew. Yeah, so it seems like 90% of the respondents are like, yeah, a curfew is a good idea because anything to tap down violence is worth trying, except for ShotSpotter. That's not worth trying, apparently, according to the city. What was your polling? I mean, I hate to put you on the spot if you don't have it here, but just, you know, broadly, do you remember, you guys? I mean, I'm sure you were asking about
that. You're talking about ShotSpotter?
Yeah.
Oh, that wasn't questioned. That wasn't.
No, right. I mean, that's what I mean. Historically,
it was. Yeah, but you know, my perception on that ShotSpotter is, there's a lot of money wrapped up in that deal. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of folks that don't like the people that are currently, you know, putting up a ShotSpotter and maintaining it. There are other ways of doing the same thing. But here's what I find interesting. The police department thinks it's very, very useful. If you talk to Eddie Johnson and others, they'll, including the current superintendent, they'll tell you the ShotSpotter, you know, helps them. And, you know, the mayor's attitude that it doesn't save lives. I grew up in a tough neighborhood in Milwaukee. Nobody snitched. Nobody ratted anybody out in the neighborhood. So when the cops came around, we had two guys at 3 o'clock in the afternoon would walk down the street when we had beat cops in the old days. We'd all be nice to them and all that, but nobody was, you know, snitch on anybody else. Well, today in the neighborhoods that are controlled by gangs, where we're short 2,000 police officers in the city of Chicago, where it takes a half hour for 911 calls to be responded to, you think they're going to point out who the shooter is and get on the front porch, say, I know who it's, here it is, over. Nobody's going to rat on anybody because their lives are in jeopardy. So yes. ShotSpotter actually provides the police at least with a starting point. I don't like surveillance cameras. I don't like surveillance, these kind of situations, but and when we're so crime ridden in a city like this, everything helps. And I just think it needs more of a coordinated approach to, you know, safety. And I think our current superintendent is trying to do his best. But, you know, in the shooting of that poor 7-year-old, he came very close earlier in the week to talking about how, you know, we can't put these people away because they are always released. Right. By the state's attorney's law. He didn't say it that way, but he came right to the very line of talking about it.
Right. He can't say anything because Brandon Johnson, otherwise affectionately known as BLM Brandon Johnson, ran against not putting Black Americans in jail. He supports Tony Preckwinkle. He supports Kim Fox and whoever her successor will be. And he doesn't want to put Black men in jail. I understand it's politics, but I keep thinking of the poor victims out there, the children and the women. Black women are routinely and constantly the subject of violent crime. They're the ones who are hurt the most, Black women.
It's the same for, you know, white guys, Mexicans, Puerto Ricans, Cubans, Frenchmen, you know, Englishmen. None of them are being incarcerated. It's a much more serious issue, you know, because it covers the entire spectrum.
Yes.
The problem, Tom. I mean, the rub of this whole thing is that, right, you said it's this whiplash that they're like, oh, hey, too many people in prison. Let's throw everybody out. Nobody goes to prison. But the real rub is going to come in a couple months or maybe a few years when we see a system where people who are being held, you know, who've qualified to be held in jail for whatever they've done. And when those numbers are disproportionately demographic one way or another, then it's going to be like, well, we didn't think of that. You know, there's no forethought to this idea of let's just let everybody go free because that's the problem. But that's not the problem. The problem is multifaceted and way beyond that. And that's not a solution. It's a way to increase crime as we get close to the DNC, which it does kind of bring us around to back to your poll, the poll, a power poll, which I love, Tom, because the VP pick is one of my absolute favorites.
Yeah, who's going to be the VP pick?
Oh, you know, according to the poll, 14% of the folks that polled said they thought Nikki Haley was still in the running. Senator J.D. Vance out of Ohio, 13%. Yes. Doug Burgum, the governor, who seems to be the front runner right now, 13%. Marco Rubio, 9%. Rubio could be helpful in Nevada and Arizona, although both of those states seem already put away by Donald Trump. Tim Scott from South Carolina, 9%. Elise Stefanik from New York, 4%. Ben Carson, the doctor, former HUD secretary, 3%. Tom Cotton, Brian Donalds, you know, Christine Noem, Tulsi Gabbard, all 2% or less. 4% of the power pollers said their choice was not on the list, and 24% said they were completely uncertain about, you know, who might be chosen. But that's going to be the key. You know, from my perspective, neither one of these presidential candidates, if they remain on the ballot in November, will be elected for more than one term. Immediately the day after, whoever gets elected becomes a lame duck. And it's all about the vice president, their behavior, their ability to grasp the world and situations, and the ability to communicate with the rest of the people here in this country. You're voting for a vice president for president. That's really what you're doing right now.
And I think my personal preference would be Senator J.D. Vance of Ohio, because I want this Trump thing to continue on, this legacy. And I don't see it continuing with Nikki Haley. I know you got to get there first. You got to win the office first. But my view, J.D. Vance, Ohio is a big deal in the presidential race. And I want to see that happen.
Well, it's a safe seat. If you flip a Senate seat in Ohio, and then you're more likely to, you know, not lose that. And I think Stefanik is my call on it at this point, because I think she is most on brand for him, for Trump, and is very loyal and is tough to, you know, go up against. I mean, can you imagine her and Kamala Harris in a debate, which is, you know, that would be interesting.
Well, the one thing about this debate that's coming up, gentlemen, I have to ask you, because the White House, Biden White House, and the MSNBC, CNN, and all of them are wringing their hands about videos that show Joe Biden wandering off, and the Democrats through their agents are saying these videos are fakes. They're fakes. I don't think they're fakes, but what do you guys think?
Well, I think what they've decided to do, and I would suggest this probably comes after weeks and weeks and weeks of research, is that because people are so unwilling to believe what they see on television news, so unwilling to believe what they think is misinformation on the internet, so concerned about getting fed, you know, information that's inaccurate or, you know, put together by the mainstream media or the off-stream media, however you like to refer to it, people have no faith in our institutions. Yeah. Journalism is near the bottom, according to the Gallup poll and the Pew Research Center. You know, the ministers of God, priests are in the lower 20%. I mean, educational institutions, colleges are there now. So if the majority of people, especially intelligent people, don't believe what they're seeing, why not piggyback on that and say, well, this is just video that the other guys are putting together to make him look bad. And the perception would be, well, you know what? I can't believe anything I see. So maybe they're right. I think they're leaning into that attitude that people have that would actually is helpful for Joe Biden, because people say, yeah, it's probably put together by some guys in the basement at Fox Network or whatever. I think that's what they decided to do because that helps them.
Yeah,
now, I've looked at all those clips of people that I think they're authentic. We're talking about what I think is authentic. That's absurd because it is. It is. I've seen it, you know, with 6-7 different network cameras. But I think they're leaning into that. Yeah,
you've run political campaigns. Jeff Carlin has, run news stories off political campaigns. Do you guys think that the American people are so stupid or so easily manipulated that they would not react to a video of Joe Biden wandering around so he has to be led by the hand?
If I were the campaign manager for Joe Biden, I would have been furious with President Obama for doing that to my candidate, grabbing him by the wrist and turning him around and then pretending he was putting his shoulder around his back to communicate with him. The damage was already done. Yeah. There are other ways of doing that, of, you know, getting hold of, you know, somebody on a stage and moving them off to the direction they need to. I been in situations like that, not with somebody who's completely, you know, not cognizant or, you know, having issues, but somebody who's not aware of where he is at the time and needs to be moved or herded in one direction. There are ways to do that without making them look that way. I would, you know, President Obama, you know, did a disservice to Joe Biden, thinking it probably that he was doing a service, but it was a real disservice to grab him the way he did, startle him the way it looked to me, and then lead him off stage as if he was unable to do that on his own.
And now they're telling us
the controversy, and now they're telling us it's not real.
Every time we live in a world of fire hose information and media, and you know, it's as long as that hose is pressurized, it doesn't really matter what you're throwing at people, because you're going to hit the people who it resonates with. You know, you throw 100 things at the wall, well, 100 people in a room, each one's going to take something away from it differently.
That's the problem with what we're doing in the world of elected politics today. I mean, we already know. Listen, I have had friends and relatives that are going through the aging process, have gone through the aging process. It's very, very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, if it's somebody you love and you've been around your whole life, it's heartbreaking. And I don't like seeing anybody that way and struggle that way. And I believe, you know, caregiver, somebody who's, you know, should be with them, you know, everybody always has a handler, somebody who, you know, even when you're well, you have a handler to move you from one spot to another, because your job is to be on message, not on location. So right. In this particular instance, you know, with Joe Biden, I think it's terrible that we're talking about it, yeah. Because the reality is it's a terrible disease. You know, when aging is just, it's terrible for all the complications. And we already know from the special prosecutor, not the special prosecutor, but from the Justice Department, that said on the record, the Justice Department, that they weren't going to prosecute him for keeping records at his home and in his garage because he was too old and would be unable to testify properly. I mean, that we already know that
they couldn't get, the problem is, if they put him on the stand, the jury would say, oh, forget it, he's just lost. And that's right. what they don't want to do.
But the prosecutor made that decision without talking to a jury. I mean, right. So we already know what the Justice Department thinks. So the conversation about this whole thing, and, you know, Pierre's conversations from the podium in the press room, you know, just throws gasoline on it. I don't understand that. I think if you handle this thing with a sense of compassion, understanding, you still can function as a human being, and you still can do a lot of great things in life if you have assistance. And he's got the smartest people in the world around him. We'd like to think our government is filled with very bright people. Why not lean on that rather than, you know, putting him out there all the time on his own?
Well,
I just don't understand the problem
is, Tom, these are big events, most of these things that he has to be at. And he has to be, he was in a room full of the leaders of state and the leaders of commerce. And they got to get the photo op, or else it didn't happen. I mean, that's the rule. And then, so they got him. This is the best they can get out of him, which brings us back to the point of he shouldn't be running. He should step down. He's too old.
Yeah. Well, where is the vice president? Now, one of the pieces of tape, they are standing and watching some music. She's kind of dancing. Everybody's kind of dancing. He's kind of very stoked standing there. Right. I would have thought, now, this doesn't take college education. This doesn't take anything except being a human being with a sense of compassion.
Right.
She's standing next to him on his right. Well, she could easily, be talking to him, being engaged with him, and make him feel more comfortable.
Right.
And he would look better on camera. I'm concerned that inside the White House, the choreography is not there. They're not thinking.
That's
if you're a Democrat, you want them to be thinking in order to win this election.
Well, that's the thing. We're going to see how they react and how they change when he's out in public. But that's the thing. Like, you know, somebody should be arm in arm with him at all times. And we should be arguing of whether or not they're doing it just because he gets lost. Like, it shouldn't be like, oh, he got lost. They should have had somebody arm in arm with him. They should have had this from the jump. And now there's going to be some sort of change. But it boils back down to Tom and John, the idea that this he should not be a candidate or front running candidate for president. And the fact that we're in this bizarro world that this is what's happening is just, we've done this to ourselves, and how do we get back? I think it's listening to Tom's polls and trying to figure out what people really think and want, and how do we service them and at least get them, everyone back in the room together, and be like, hey, look, we all kind of want out the same things. We're just, you know, stuck fighting each other.
Well, could he last another 4 years? I think all of America understands the answer to that question. It's no.
He's not going to. I said on television, a newscast a year ago, you know, knowing the terrible course of these diseases, that he won't be president in 25. You know, the vice president will take over somewhere along the way. It's just best for him and best for the country. You know, if you take a look at when they were in Europe, when he was, he turned away from the ceremony that they were viewing. It was, I think, the premier or the prime minister of Italy that turned around, and she gently moved him around.
Yeah, they're saying that's a fake video.
Well, they're going to do that.
Yeah, but I thought that she did that with a great deal of aplomb and understanding and caring the way she went about it. And you would hope the vice president would take some of those lessons with her along the campaign trail. I would have the vice president with him everywhere to help out.
You know? And Tom, too, so I got to ask you, the writing on the wall here, everything we're seeing, like, you're like, is it inside? Why are they skipping these things? All these things, like, why are they missing this? Why are they letting this happen? Do you think that the big D Democratic Party plan is that if we can get Joe in, that's all we got to do, and then we're set because he's not going to make it, and you know, we're going to have Kamala, and then we're going to have another 4 years, and then another seated election. I mean, do you think that is some backroom big plan? Because I can't see them thinking, anybody thinking that this is the guy, this is the guy.
Oh, I think there's a couple parallel paths, and I think they're hoping he could stick and be there on the other side of the election. But I think, you know, the president and his wife, they are absolutely adamant that they are not going anywhere, number one. Number two, the apparatus of the party is worried about the down ballot losing the House, which they should win. And the Senate doesn't seem close right now. And so they want to make sure they at least, you know, recapture the House of Representatives, the appropriations vehicle in the world. So they want to be able to do that. But yeah, there's another group of people that are saying, we're going to put him on stage on the 27th. Yeah. There's plenty of time, if he doesn't do well, to bring in, you know, somebody else at the convention or do something else. But on the 27th, on the debate, that night is so critically important. And as you know, he's taking the next 5-6 days to spend in Delaware with his staff to, rehearse and, you know, go through this process, because that debate will tell so much about what it is going to happen in Chicago. I think there's still, you know, clarity on the Democrats' point of view that if he doesn't do well there, then, you know, there may be a move to do something.
He is our president. I've never subscribed to the theory that, you know, he's not my president. Joe Biden is the president of the United States. He's my president. I don't like him. I don't wish him ill. I believe he's a corrupt old man, corrupt, paid off by China, all that. I think that he should face the music. I don't want him to skip away, because Jeff and Tom Serafin, I don't want the puppet master to skip away. And the only way to hold the puppet master to account is for Joe Biden to get whomped in November. And by the puppet master, I mean the guy that we're building the statue and temple of adoration and fealty to, his puppet master, Barack Obama. What say you guys?
The polls that came out this past week, I think it was the Marist poll and a couple others, show that, you know, Joe Biden has picked up a lot of strength with the independent voters and actually has taken the lead that Donald Trump has had for the last 6 months with the independent voters.
Yes.
The independent voters are going to be the ones who are going to make the decision about who the next president is. The left and the right are going to go after each other like they have been, and the votes will be whatever they are. But it's that huge independent vote, and some people say it's as large as 43%, 44%. Oh, my. Other people say, you know, it's 30. I think it's closer to 40 than it is to 30. There's a lot of people out there that are going to be making their decisions based on the debate and the performance at the DNC and how we behave down the stretch, because there will be, if you're a student of history, you're not doomed to repeat it. There will be an October surprise. Sure. There will be an October surprise. And usually the incumbent takes the advantage and gets the advantage of the October surprise. So I think he's very much in the race, John, to answer your question. I think Donald Trump has come a long way. He's done a nice job. He's got a much better campaign apparatus.
Yeah.
He's much more thorough. He's much more measured. But in the performance on the 27th, you have to be able to watch this the debate with the sound off.
Yeah.
Tape it and watch it with the sound off. That will tell you who won.
That's
and
for
then,
sure.
And then listen to it without the video. That will also tell you who won that debate. I learned that trick from from an old buddy of mine for a long time ago. And you know, that's the way you measure political performances. And on this one, if the president, you know, nods off, if Donald Trump is rude, crude, and undesirable, he's going to lose the election based on that performance. He's got to be compassionate. He's got to be measured, and he's got to actually pull back. And the irony of all ironies, since the debate rules have been set up by the president's team, they're all pro Biden on what he needs to be a good performer. Ironically, it also works for Donald Trump.
You know, so
it does, because it will mute Donald Trump. You won't be trying to talk over the microphones. Number one, they'll both be seated. They'll both be able to.
No, they're standing, aren't they?
No, they're seated. And the last time I checked, and then there's no notes. So, I mean, it actually helps him, although, you know, it's CNN and it's Jake Tapper and everybody else. But, you know, Donald Trump kind of really excels when he's in the den of the opposition. So he's got to be measured, and he's got to be, you know, gentle, kind, yet thorough on issues. And all Joe Biden has to do is talk about the economy, and things are getting better from his perspective on the economy. Stay away from immigration. But if he talks about immigration, he's got to talk about why and what immigration has meant to the country for 200 years. There are ways to do this. And then, John, and you two guys, Jeff, you understand the post-debate strategy and spin session. It's going to be critical this time. It's always important. But this time, the spin room is going to be huge. And I'm really, really, really interested to see who's going to be doing the spin, because you know, they're strategically now training everybody on how to do that post-debate spin, and that's going to sustain itself. And who's going to be strategic and on the air the next morning with clips? I'm very interested in seeing that. I mean, the war room on this debate is it's got to be exceptional.
Yeah, and Tom, real quick, I was watching this. I think the seating thing was a red herring or something, because it sounds like they both agreed to stand for this one. But there was claims that Biden had asked, or CNN had asked, on Biden's behalf to have seating. But that sounds like especially according to the USA Today 2 days ago. So I think that might be a misinformation, but it happens, right?
If all it is Joe Biden screaming, "You're a convict, you're convicted," and Trump screaming whatever he's going to scream, that would not bode well for Donald Trump.
Advantage incumbent. The incumbent has the advantage, and Donald Trump has to be larger from a presidential point of view than President Joe Biden. Yeah. He's got to perform as a president, not as a candidate. And if he can't do that, Joe Biden wins that debate and probably then moves on and wins the election.
And Trump has not without gaffes and making weird statements in a lot of his public thing appearances. So it's going to be super exciting to watch. I mean, this will be, I think, almost better than the first, hopefully better than Trump Hillary the first time around, because that was more awkward than anything. Tom, we've taken a lot of your time. Anything you you want us to push people to, you're working on now? Obviously, the Crisis Cast is fantastic. Listen, and we can check you out on Twitter.
Right. Well, it's good to be with you two guys. And, you know, it's we're in the middle of the summer. It's hot in Chicago. And let's pray for, you know, a very quiet and peaceful rest of the summer. You know, it's not started that way, but my attitude is, you know, let's get everybody, you know, outside in the parks and enjoying themselves. And, you know, I'd like to, you know, I have some friends that are cops, and, you know, they go out every day and they don't know if they're going to come back home at night. It's really tough. So let's pray for peace in the city. God bless you guys.
Thanks, Tom.
God bless you, Tom. Thanks for being here on the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way.
What does it mean to you? Because Jeff's always looking for more promotional material. What is the Chicago Way to Tom Sarah?
Chicago Way is tough, resilient, gutty, gritty, immigrant oriented. It's the way we build things in this country. In Chicago, we build things. We make things happen. We're not afraid of anything. We get knocked down all the time, but we get back up on our feet. There isn't a boxing ring that can keep us out of it. You know, we are the champions of the world. We're Chicago.
Well said,
Tom. Love you, Tom Serafin. Just love you, man. Thank you. Peace. For Tom Serafin of Serafin & Associates, host of the Crisis Cast podcast. For Jeff Carlin, executive producer of WGN Radio, my friend, future physics teacher, and for me, John Cass of johncassnews.com, the place where you'll always get a good cup of Midwestern common sense. Thanks for joining us on this Chicago Way. And talk to you again next time on the next Chicago Way podcast on WGN+.